Welcome to the BioOptimize Summit, where we are exploring the next level of physical and mental health you can achieve through targeted and intentional optimization. I am your host, Dr. Amy, and today I am so excited to have with me one of my heroes, a person who's already touched my life and changed my life in many ways that we'll get into today. And this is none other than Bo Eason. And he is a speaker, performer, and author, and he actually started his career in the NFL. And I would like to say, I don't want to take away his thunder and take away his stories, but I would say he started his career in the NFL at age 9 when he first had that dream and drew up a 20-year plan of how to make that happen. And he was a top pick for the Houston Oilers and then continued on with the San Francisco 49ers and then had injuries and came out. And what he has done with his life and his career since then has been really phenomenal, very unique. And he's been able to capture all of that energy and physicality and turn this into theater and drama and stories. And so he actually developed and performed his one-man play, Runt of the Litter, which opened in New York and had raving reviews, which of course he was very nervous about at the time, given how critical they can be. And so since then, he has now turned that into teaching and coaching other people on how to do the same thing, how to bring this expression with the body and help them to become communicators, better communicators, not only with their story, but then being able to know how to use their body to communicate with so much more than you can just with words. So I'm very excited to have Bo with us today, and he's going to be talking to us about how he does this, how he brings in this whole physicality and movement piece, which is so essential to truly living optimized. So welcome, Bo. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. It's good to be here.
Yeah, so when I first experienced you, it was a moment that I clearly remember. I was sitting in the audience of Mindshare 2 years ago, and just overall, and it's a phenomenal conference. And then you walk onto the stage, and immediately I am captured, which of course is your whole intent, right? Like that is how you have designed everything that you do, from how you move to how you speak. Like it is designed to capture the audience's attention. And you're right. Like, as you say, I could not look away. I was so caught up in the story. And of course you were doing the story of, you know, the attorney dad and working with your son and not letting him drop the ball. I mean, this is how vividly I remember it. I remember the story, and I remember watching you and just how you moved your body, and you actually enacted each of the different parts in the story. And I sat back and I'm just like, this is phenomenal. Like, this is what I want to be able to not only do more of myself, but then pass on to the people that I work with and pass on, you know, to the moms and the families and the people that I work with. And so from that moment, I had you in mind of like, okay, this is like the end goal for what I want to do and be and live out. And then the next year at Mindshare, so last year at Mindshare, I was one of the speakers for the Future of Health Talks. And so this is like a speaking competition, and I'm up there on the stage and I'm doing my thing and I've done some preparation, but of course now I know from you, like, preparation is everything, right? Our relationship with practice. And I came and I sat and watched the rest of the speakers, and the very last one that they put on was Katie Kimball. And she walked on the stage, and I immediately, same thing, like I could not look away from her. She captured the audience. She captured me with how she was not only telling her story, but how she was moving on the stage in terms of telling her story. And I walked up to her afterwards and I said, okay, Katie, what's your secret? How did you do it? And of course, she won the competition, right? How did you do it? And she says, oh, I trained with Bo. And I'm like, oh. It's coming back to Bo Eason again. All right, I need to go meet this guy. I need to go work with him. And so I signed up and I just went through the Personal Story Power event, and just incredible stuff. So already you've changed my life so much. I have so much more I could share with you in terms of how I've changed my daily environment even, and how I prepare my body, how I, you know, set up myself for success and being very present in my body. But how was that transition for you in terms of like taking all of this energy, a movement that you had with playing pro football into the drama, into the theater, into actually telling stories.
Yeah, it was an amazing transition, and it was all due to a guy named Larry Moss. And Larry Moss is a very well-known performance coach, acting coach, actually. In fact, whenever you see the Academy Awards, usually whoever wins best actress or best actor is always saying, thank you, Larry Moss, for coaching me on this role. And he was the director of my play, Run to the Litter. So I came to the theater world from the football world. So those sound like the 180 degrees, you know, in opposite directions, but they're actually pretty darn similar in that performance is performance. Physicality is physicality. Now, go from an NFL stadium, the field inside the stadium, that's a different platform. It's a different medium than it is on stage or on camera. So you have to make those adjustments. So when I met Larry Moss after my football career was over and I wrote my one-man show and we were about to open in New York. So we were training and rehearsing and you know, you mentioned this, Amy, about relationship to practice, rehearsal. And Larry Moss has got like the most intense work ethic of any performance coach that I've ever seen. And we were in the middle of rehearsals about a year into rehearsal. So no paying audience has ever seen this play. And we were into it for a year, just rehearsing and practicing the show over and over and cutting, adding, and rewriting. One day he comes to rehearsals and I'm thinking, we're getting close. Like we're a year into this thing. We're getting close. We're going to start putting this thing up in front of audiences. And Larry says to me, Bo, I'm going to bring a guy in to help us. And I'm like, what do you mean? After a year, you're going to bring a guy in? What do you mean a guy? He goes, I know a guy who is the greatest movement coach in the world. And I was like, Larry, did you forget? I'm an elite athlete. I know how to move. All right. I don't need a movement coach. I know how to move. That's what I do best. And he said, no, it's completely different. You're telling a different story. And body, the molecules, the solar plexus have to be informed with this story. And if we do this correctly, because this was his goal. It was my initial intention. His goal was for 90 minutes of this show, to not allow any person to go to the bathroom, to move their cup, to open up those the show. He didn't want them to breathe unless the performer, which was me in this case, allowed them to breathe. So he set the standard so high that we brought in Louis Rodriguez, who's the greatest movement coach in the world. And from that moment on, the play, the performance of the play exploded and it took off because we worked so intensely. And here's what's great about theater and how it's just like elite athletics. It was choreographed, it was practiced and rehearsed and mentally visualized over and over and over again with all of us, with my wife, Dawn, who produced the show, with Larry Moss, the director, and Jean-Louis Rodrigue, the movement coach. And we did this thing over and over and over again to the point where every sentence, every line had a physical expression to it, a movement to it that actually told the story. And then guess who we invited in? So we did this, we started doing workshop after workshop after workshop after workshop. And we were in New York, right? And Larry Moss invites Twyla Tharp, you know, one of the greatest, not only dancers of all time, but one of the greatest choreographers of all time. And she, at the time, was choreographing. I can't remember what the play was, the production on Broadway, that she was directing at that point. but she came to one of our workshops. So this is a you know, a 30 people inside a workshop in a little theater in New York City. And Twyla Tharp watched it because we wanted her feedback. We wanted this story to be able to be known to everybody without any words, right? With the movement of the character. And at the end, she goes, I got a couple of things to say. One, this is like a ballet. So it doesn't even need words, even though we had 56 pages of words, right?
We had the script.
Right, we had the script. And I was actually saying words. The words, you know, you don't, no one really hears your words. No one really cares about your words. They care about the expression that that the body has. That's what they can't look away from.
Right.
And that was Larry's commitment. That was Jean-Louis' commitment. That was my commitment. And then Twyla Tharp gave us one note. She goes, I just want to help you guys out with one thing. Here it is. That guy needs to put on more weight. Me. That was her note. I got to put on more weight. Isn't that funny? She wanted a bigger person on stage. Isn't that
a bigger presence? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm a former athlete at this point, right? And I'd played and I was pretty, you know, I was 219 pounds when I played. So I was big for my position, but she wanted more gravitas, more weight on this body, on this stage. And I just always thought back to that. I go, that is such a succinct, great coaching. And only the great coaches can do that. You could say one thing and change the whole performance. So as it turned out, Amy, that show ran for 17 years.
Yeah.
1,300 performances that I did. 50 cities, had two openings in New York. And it was the feedback and the thing that the critics all said was you can't look away. The very standard that Larry Moss set to begin with, everyone said, and we didn't say it, they said it. Like, you can't look away from this raw animal on stage. And so I didn't know how to do that as a performer. Jean-Louis and Larry Moss taught me how to do that. So when people start, like you, who had of me on stage, everyone thinks that that's just he's just got it. They don't realize that 17 years of hard work to actually, and here's the beauty of this physicality, Amy, is it's not that us human beings have to learn how to move. We have to relearn how to move because we all are these predator, dangerous, lethal, noble animals is what we really are. And we have to like give ourselves permission to go back to that primitive state where people cannot look away. Because, you know, I always challenge my audiences. I always say, well, if I put a lion right here on this stage, right here in front of you, what would you do, audience? Would you tell me what you would do?
No, could not look away. I would not be able to go to the bathroom. I would not be checking my phone. I would not be looking at anything other than this lion.
Right. And that is the training. So us human beings, like this, your audience, Amy, the first thing we have to do is remember who we are. It's much easier once you start to surrender to who you are anyway. So you and me are predator animals. And not only are we predator animals, we are the smartest predator animal. We are the most lethal predator animal. We're the noblest. We're the most trustworthy. It's the most majestic term that you can give somebody. Yet our news media assigns that moniker to the worst of our society.
This is
which
true.
I find very strange, right?
It's backwards.
Yeah, it's all backwards. And that's actually what we are. So they'll assign this to people like Harvey Weinstein and these people, and then they'll ruin the term. They'll ruin the term. Now you and me, Amy, and everybody watching us today, is kind of ashamed and embarrassed of what we are as human beings. And then we leave that part of us on the sidelines and never use it in front of a camera and never use a stage and never use it when we're, you know, out in public because we're embarrassed or ashamed of who we are. And I'm telling you, you can't do that. The promise is, and it's a simple promise. This is what Jean-Louis promised me. And it's what I promise everybody that I train and work with, is if you do what I say, or more importantly, if you just do what I do, then people do not have the ability to look away from you. Mm-hmm. And so if I ask, you know, everybody watching today, what would that mean to your life? If people don't have the ability to dismiss you, because that's all you and me are doing all day. We're just dismissing people who don't move the dial. We're just like, boom, boom, not a threat. Boom, right. Boom, boom, dismiss, dismiss. That's all you do all day. Well, what if you were the one person they could not do that to, just like a lion, just like a falcon, just like a great white shark? Those are predator animals, no different than us. You cannot dismiss a predator who is unapologetic about being a predator.
And what I love about pretty this, cool, Bo, huh? Is that this really is applicable to everyone, because even if you are a mom at home, right? Like, you are still a leader in your home. And so this still just as much applies to an executive who's running their own business or in meetings. And so much of our society has kind of moved us into this place of stillness, where now we sit in front of computers and we have forgotten how to actually move and embody leadership, embody strength, embody that sense of being able to walk into a room and people feel your presence and pay attention to you, because they sense that coming from you is something of importance, rather than what most of us have kind of been moved to for several different reasons is, you know, I don't know if I'm important. I don't know if I'm really here, and I may not even be fully here, right? Like, I may be physically here, but not necessarily really here in my body. And that's why I love so much your work, especially with the Sacred Six, because it really brings a person into their body so that they are there and they are a presence. There's a strength. There's a solid essence about them, kind of like, you know, you putting on more weight for your play. Yeah. It's that sense of, there is weight to you. And so I'd love for you to talk a little bit about the Sacred Six, and I'll share some of the things that I have here that very much relate to the Sacred Six that you do. And something else that I'd love for you to just briefly mention and talk on is, so many of the people that I have worked with have experienced some form of chronic stress, abandonment, trauma in their past. And sometimes this is so far in their past that they don't even really have a strong memory of it. But what happens, Bo, is that their body remembers it. And when I try to do this work with them, they start to shrink back in their body because they don't want to be seen. They are afraid of their own power. They are afraid of their own strength. And so that doesn't feel safe to them because they don't know what to do with that. They don't know how to move in a way that is strong and yet calm and safe and decisive. It feels disorganized to them. Yeah. So yeah. So those are the two things that I'd love for you to jump on. Sacred Six. Like, how do you actually bring this, help people now, you know, train other people to do what you've done through your Sacred Six.
Yeah.
And then what would you say to people who notice in their body, right? Their mind is different. Their mind says, yes, I want that. And their body just tends to pull back.
Yeah. Got it. Great. Great questions. The Sacred Six is something that was taught to me to activate my body before performance. So if you think of, like, everybody right now, think of the greatest performance you've ever seen, like the top two or three. What are they? Is it a musical? Is it Beyonce? Is it Michael Jordan? Is it Mikhail Baryshnikov? Is it Yo-Yo Ma? Who, Elton John? Who is it? Right? I will guarantee you the greatest performance you ever saw, that person didn't just walk out there and be great. There's no such thing. Usain Bolt is the fastest human being ever recorded, right? So when the Olympics roll around and he enters the Olympic stadium and is about to run the 100 meters, do you think he just, you know, walks in casually to the stadium, walks over to the blocks, gets down into the blocks, waits for the gun to sound and runs? No, he has spent his life training to be the ultimate performer. So he does not take that lightly. Same is true for all the other examples that I just mentioned. But you and me, we don't think of ourselves as performers, but we are.
We are.
We're the ultimate performers. If you're a mom, if you're a dad, guess what? Your kid's greatness is based on your performance.
Yes.
Day in and day out, your physicality has to be attended to, activated, and warmed up before you can have that kind of impact where your children can't look away from you. Think of what that means to your children's future life. If they can't look away from the person who loves them the most and is in charge of their greatness, that's you. You got to have yourself activated. So that's why the Sacred Six is just six small little exercises. But when you do six little small little exercises, which take like 2 minutes each, it moves the dial because it activates your voice, your body, and puts you in touch with this instrument, which it just happens to be. This instrument that you and I have is the greatest creation that God ever created of expression, this instrument. And yet you and me don't treat it that way. We treat it like it's nothing. Like it's, I don't like this thing. Oh, I don't like it. Oh, look at me. I'm this, I'm that. This thing is the greatest instrument of expression ever created. We're not going to treat it we're not going to treat it differently than what it is. So we're going to activate that thing no different than if we went to the Nutcracker and watched Mikhail Baryshnikov dance. Do you think he's activated? Do you think he's warmed up? While we're sitting in our seats waiting for the curtain to draw, guess what he's doing?
Preparing.
He is activating. He is getting himself ready so that you and me, the paying audience, cannot look away.
So I love this, Bo, because this is what I'm working with my moms right now. So I have the intentional parenting for attachment program. And so they're parents that are working with kids who already have this disruption of trust and attachment and security and trying to rebuild that. And this is what I've been telling them long before you came into my life, but you've given me just this whole other angle to be able to speak to them. And that is, we need to get them to the place where your kids cannot look away from you, because right now they are looking away. They're not trusting you. They're not seeing you as their leader. And we need to change that dynamic for them to establish that security and that trust and that attachment in you. And it has really not as much to do with what they say, right? Yeah. It's not as much what they say. It's what their body is saying and how present they are in their body, how they can move their body, how they can have this presence, this physicality, and being able to work with their nervous system. And so much of what you're saying is really working with the nervous system in terms of the voice, which is like the tone of voice, the pace at which you're speaking, but even just your facial expression and how you're moving your body. Like, people, especially kids, will pick up on that. They know just by looking at you whether you're really there, whether you're stressed, whether you're overwhelmed, or whether you're in a good place and in a place where you can also take care of their needs. Yep. So this physicality piece is so important from parents to executives.
I agree 100%. That's so great that you train that stuff already, because look, that is the missing link. That's the last straw. That's what these kids need the most, because anything physical in their life is kind of been poo-pooed. It's been like, don't wrestle with your brother. Don't hug your friends. I mean, all kinds of weird stuff, right? Like, totally, that's not human. You know, that's inhumane, right?
It is against our instincts.
Right? It's like we're pack animals. You know, how can that be? Even, I find it weird too, Amy, that even athletes who are supposed to be physical, they're not even physical anymore. They keep making the rules so that no one touches one another. I'm like, it's like an antiseptic surgical room instead of an athletic event, you know? Like everything has to be pristine and separate. And I'm like, no, that's not what
human athletics.
That's why we just forget that's how we're made and that's what we desire. And as soon as we get a little bit activated, and really a lot of it's neuro, like once you start to activate your body and your voice, now your brain goes boom and it's ready to play. And I always say, if you get your feet, like in Sacred Six, you get your feet planted on the ground, what happens to the rest of your body is it feels the safety to come out and play.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so so Jean-Louis' only work with me, Amy, was he goes, all I want you to be by the time the curtain opens, and this activation used to take 4 hours way back when we were in New York. So the show would start at 8 o'clock curtain in New York. I would get to the theater at 4 and begin the activation and the warm-up because we knew I was going to have to perform this play like for hundreds of nights in a row.
Yep.
So you had to have the stamina and you had to have the ability to give these people what they paid for, which is basically a raw animal on stage, right? The working with kids, like we have 3 great kids, right? Dawn and I. They don't listen, and we get paid to speak, right? They don't listen to one thing we say. Nothing. Nope. They just do what we do. So they're
exactly
right. They do what we do. If we work hard, guess what they do? Right? If we brush our teeth, guess what they do? But if we tell them to brush their teeth, they're like, nah, I don't know.
Right. And I love that you bring in the feet, and this is why I love so much of what you do with your work, Bo, because it so aligns with everything that I know about, like the medical side of things and the nervous system. And so I've been working with the nervous system and optimizing the nervous system for, oh my goodness, more than 10 years now since I adopted my son from the foster care system and had to figure this stuff out to help him. Yeah. And the feet are so much engaged with the whole nervous system all the way up to the brain. And you mentioned, you know, we have to be in that activation state in order to even be able to be creative and be able to show up and play. And that is so true. I'm sure you know all of this, but you've got like the 3 different states of the nervous system. Sympathetic and freeze are your 2 survival states. And when you are in either survival state, there is not going to be any creativity. Like you are there to survive. So any exploring opportunities, you know, potential, thriving, no. We are in survival. We are hyper-focused on a solution to survive that situation. And we have to shift into that parasympathetic, what you're calling the activated state. And then that is when it's like our body feels safe enough to do this exploring, to do this creativity, to show up and play and move in different ways. And the feet are one of the most powerful ways I know as well in order to activate this parasympathetic state. So here's my ball that you gave me as part of the training. And I use this a lot. And I don't know if this will be helpful to you, Bo, but one thing that I also use is an acupressure mat. And so these are literally like little spokes. They're like little needles. And it is a pillow, but how I use it is under my feet. And so I will stand on this in the mornings as part of my morning routine to activate my body, my mind. And then I even have it right here at my desk so that anytime I'm feeling just starting to feel that fatigue or I'm starting to feel, you know, that disconnect and I need to activate my body again, I just put my feet and wrap my feet around this and it brings that level of activation again. So here's maybe a new tool that you can use for your audience and trainees as well. It's the acupressure mat.
Is that a mat or is that a
roller? No, it's like a roller. It's intended for a pillow. So it is not flat. I do have the flat mat, but this is better for my feet because it's round and I can literally just wrap my feet around it. activates my whole feet. And it's, again, very, very simple, very effective, just like, you know, the ball. And before your ball, I used to use a tennis ball. Yeah. And it just wasn't enough. You know, like the tennis ball did not have enough weight. It wasn't hard enough to really be able to put the pressure on it that my feet need. Yeah. And so, yeah, your ball has been very helpful for adding that to my morning routine. And then I've got all these tools that I love that it's so aligned with what you do in terms of the Sacred Six and the actual, like, this is the science behind activating our nervous system in the way that allows us to be fully present and calm rather than activating in a, you know, anxious and wired. It's activating in a way that we can be showing up truly creative and in a place where we are fully alive in our body.
Yeah.
And then one of the other things that you do for the Sacred Six is the voice. So I'd love for you to just go through that a little bit, because that's something that I have started to do every day as well now. And yeah. So yeah, if you want to share that, that would be awesome too.
Yeah, if everyone would just think of their voice for a second. Everybody thinks your voice is your mouth, right? But it is not. That is, that's the only the thing it's coming out of, right? That's the only opening that voice is coming out of. Think of your voice, and think of that metaphorically too. Think of your voice, your vision, your voice as this whole body, even beyond this body, but it's this instrument that is the instrument of expression. And all of that that's coming from your feet and coming from your breath, which if everybody would just start taking a little bit deeper breath, I do this, and we all tend to do this. We tend to breathe like about this deep, you know, right. Yep. Here in our chest.
Yep.
And when I get scared or get nervous on stage, I do it too.
Goes even shallow.
Yeah. And you have to remind, especially when you, like in the NFL, those guys look like they're confident, right? But you're actually going like this. When a 350 pounder's coming after you, you're like, oh my God, you're in that survival mode. And you've got to learn to calm yourself down. So if you'll just think of this instrument, your body, and think of getting that breath in deeper, like down toward your sex, down toward your private parts more. If you'll think of your breath going that low, that gives you so much gravitas and so much power. Because if you breathe shallow and you're talking to a kid, or you're talking to an audience, or you're coaching somebody on camera like we're doing now, if you breathe shallow, your audience does exactly what you do.
Yep.
So you're the leader. So if you're the mom, you're the leader. So the kid's going to do exactly what you do. They're just mirroring you. So if you have the confidence to take that breath way down there where your power is, where all creation comes from, they will do the same. And they'll start to calm themselves just based on who you're being. But if you're talking to them and you're, trying to get a point across like this, then that's what they do too. And now you've got a panicked kid or, you know, an athlete or whatever. You don't want them in that place. You want them just to take the deep breath. So that's very important. So now when you breathe down in there and then open your mouth to speak, now all that good stuff, which is the, you know, really the breadbasket of creation, is what I'm asking you to come from, breathe from. Now that voice is informed with power and intent. And that's why people, I don't like when people say this, oh, you got a good voice, you got a bad voice, I have a sucky singing voice. That's just not true. It's just not authentic voice.
Right.
The authenticity of the voice has got to come from lower than you think. And
yes.
When you do that, you're kind of going to, you might freak out the first few times you do it because it feels
unfamiliar.
Unfamiliar and strong. And
yes.
Kind of, it's as if you just put your foot down and audience or child, you're going to listen to me. Here it comes. And you're kind of going to go, oh shit. I got a lot of power, a lot more than I thought.
Right. It can be scary to see that.
Yep. Because we're so used to apologizing for our own power so we don't offend anybody. Right. But look, no one is going to pay attention to somebody who's apologetic about what they naturally are, which is this instrument of expression and predatory. Right.
And I love that when we tap into that, which again, like just to bring in the science, you're talking about the vagus nerve, and that vagus nerve goes all the way down. And that is the origin of it, is all the way down in our pelvis, those sex organs. And when we are able to engage that, we're able to express this authority without having to be threatening.
Yep. So, yeah. And here's another thing. When you talk with people who come from, who can take the time to breathe from there and come from there, something so attractive about those people. Now, I don't mean like the traditional attraction, like she's classically pretty or he's classically handsome. I don't mean that. I mean, there's some kind of attraction because it's so rare that somebody comes for, is brave enough to come from their power, that it's intoxicating to an audience. And the audience, when I say audience, that could be an audience of one.
True. And it's almost like this attraction that's based on automatic high respect, high regard for them because of just the essence and the power that they're emitting through their physicality.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And those are and so listen, all of us, just so everyone's can hear this again. So all of us are this way anyway.
Right.
We were born this way, right? And I guarantee you the first day of kindergarten, you did not apologize for pulling the person in front of you in line's hair or shoving them out of the way so you could be number one. You did not apologize for that. That's actually instinctually, that's who we are, is to be number one, right? And so the kindergarten teacher on that day then blows the whistle and then ruins everything for the rest of your life by telling you to be nice or be apologetic or keep your hands to yourself or don't speak too loudly. All these kind of rules that now are embroidered on the pillow that sits on your sofa. Don't talk too loud. Don't be too big for your britches. Keep being nice. All these kinds of things that you've lived your life. And now you can be dismissed that quickly if you follow those rules. But if you're in the business of training people, meaning kids or adults, and inspiring them and leading them, you can't play that game of apology. You can't. You've got to go back to your nature, what Mother Nature intended you to be. And you've got to side with Mother Nature. I'm sure all of you have heard this quote, but it's so true. I can't remember who said it, but it said, if you want to command Mother Nature, then you must obey her.
Yep.
You can't like fly in the face of Mother Nature and expect to make any difference in the world, which is why you see the world that we currently have, because everyone's trying to get so far from their nature because they're so ashamed and embarrassed that they want to cancel each other and gossip about each other and say bad things about each other, right? It's goofy. It's not who we are.
And this is this big disconnect that's happened between our mind and our bodies, where we're really not in our bodies and feeling what is happening in our bodies, because we would feel that this does not feel right. We would feel that disconnect, and we override it so much with our brain and what we've been told is how we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to do. And so we override those instincts that are coming up from our body all the time. And we've got to unlearn that motor memory that's wired into, you know, our minds and our bodies. Yes. Yeah, so one of the things that I want to teach you, just show you after the interview, Bo, is the VU exercise. It's rather embarrassing. It looks awkward. So I don't want to do that in front of everybody right now. But I think that this is going to be another tool that you can use for your teaching, because it accesses those that deep vagus nerve. It's a way to activate the whole vagus nerve all the way down deep into the pelvis to really help people land and settle their system and come from that place of power and yet calmness and strength. Yeah. So, okay, yeah, I'm excited to show you that. And then also with the VU exercise, you can also then bring in some of the jaw movement. And so there's even like a little bit of growling and jaw movement that you can do with it to access that next level of power and instinctual aggression, healthy aggression that, yeah, I'm excited to show that to you.
Oh, great. Can't wait. That's great.
Yeah. So one of the things that has also been really helpful for me, which I'll just briefly mention, is your book. So you have a book, There's No Plan B for Your A Game. And this is another thing that I just want to very much thank you for, and am in gratitude for you for just instilling this idea, articulating the idea of how we really need to surround ourselves by the best if we want to be the best. Yeah.
So it's such a, you know, you hear that rule all the time. You hear people say, hey, you know, you're the equivalent to the five people you spend the most time with, or your bank account is the average of the five, you know, people that you hang out with the most. And what I found, I never quite equated the whole money thing like that, but I'm not against it, but I just never put those two together. But as a performer, as somebody who's trying to optimize everything that this body has got, and everything that this mind has got, I've always kind of used myself as a guinea pig to try to do that, right? I try to be the best speaker, be the best football player, be the best playwright. And when you do that, you find that everybody that around you has exactly that same mindset. So they start to be attracted to what you're attracted to. And they suddenly, your team is all about being the best at whatever they want to be the best at, right? And then all of a sudden, your kids are attempting that also. And then you notice that they're your kids' friends are then attempting to be that also. Because no one who's committed to mediocrity, which I don't think anyone has ever been committed to mediocrity, but a lot of us end up there somehow, right?
By default. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us promote mediocrity. Well, not us, but, you know.
The majority.
Yeah. They promote it and they say that's all you can expect to be or have. And I've always thought back to the day that we were conceived. And I thought, that's just not right, because, you know, that can't be. So if the news media is telling me that I'm average or I'm mediocre, and then I have to think back to the day that I was conceived. And then I think, oh, okay, so on that day, 300 million sperm were delivered, right?
And no, Bo, it was only the mediocre sperm that that created you.
Right. And so all of us on this planet were like 300 million odds that we would be the champion. And here we are, we're the champion. And now right. we're supposed to fit into a cubicle called mediocrity. That's just impossible for us to do. So I wrote the book based on that, and based on how I was raised, how my dad woke us. I was the youngest of six kids. My dad woke us up every morning by telling us we were the best. And it was early in the morning, and he was rough about it. He would rub our backs really hard. I had four older sisters and one older brother. He would rub our backs, and he would whisper in our ear and tell us we were the best. And that was a source of embarrassment, right, for many years, because my friends would hear this on my first date. My date heard this, and I was like, oh, gosh. And then one day, you know, finally surrendered. I think I was in my 20s when I finally go, maybe he's right. Maybe I am meant to be the best. Maybe I'm the best. And so I started picking occupations and saying, I want to be the best at that thing and just see if it worked. And it turns out it works, right? And so that's where the book came from. And the book flies directly in the face of our culture.
Yes.
Directly in the face. So if you love being a part of, you know, the current culture and going in their direction, I'll promise you one thing, you can't lead. You'll never be a leader if you're going with all the sheep that are going with culture. You can only lead if you go counter to the culture in the opposite direction, which is what this book is all about. Mm-hmm. And so I love writing it, and I love the title of it. There's no plan B. What I did learn as a kid, when me and my brother had these dreams of being pro athletes, we didn't know any pro athletes, and there had never been a pro athlete in our area or in our high school. So it wasn't really a possibility, right? But me and my brother had these dreams that we were going to be these NFL players. And so parents, probably well-meaning parents of our friends would come over to the house and try to talk my mom and dad out of our dreams.
Well, I mean, in our society, that's the kind thing to do, right? They don't want to set you up for being really disappointed and going into, you know, this depression when you don't meet your dreams. So let's tone down the dreams.
Yeah. And that's what they would say, basically. They'd go, let's have a plan B for these boys. Mm. Or let's not put all the eggs in one basket for these boys, because that's really going to hurt. And my mom and dad somehow knew to throw those, one, to throw those people out of the house, and two, that the only way dreams work out is if there's no option. You know, if there's no plan B, guess what happens with plan A? It's pretty predictable, right?
Right. And that's so, also where the preparation and the practice come into, you know, into all of this, is that the dreams don't come true if you're not putting in that work for the practice and the preparation of it. And all that other people see is that final game day, right? And they don't see all the work that went into that. And this is where that preparation, the activation, the physicality of it, actually embodying this dream. So it's not just in your mind. It's actually what you live out, what you carry out. You're getting up, you're going to practice. Every decision that you make is based on that dream and whether it's going to help you achieve that dream or not. And this is very much what we do with our health. And when we're optimizing our health, is this going to actually help me be optimized? Is this going to help me reach that next level of health, physical health, mental health, whatever it is that going to help me or hinder me? And when we've got those goals in mind, it makes our decisions so much easier to make.
So much easier. Yeah. It's that usually if parents come to me and they go, Bo, how come your son doesn't play video games? How come he doesn't eat bad food? How come he doesn't eat at McDonald's? Or how come he doesn't? And I go, and he's 13, right? So I go, oh, it's because his dream is too big. His dream's so big that he can't.
Right.
There's no room in his dream for those things. Because that actually hurts the dream. And yes. What it has to do is help the dream, because the dreams, you know, if I told you the dream, you would go like this, that's impossible. That can't happen. That's what you know, most of us would say. If I told the news media his dream, they would go like this, that's only for the gifted people. That's only for the lucky ones. You know, they'll make up any excuse to not allow that dream to be, you know, to come to fruition. Well, what I've learned is once you stay true and loyal to the one thing that you should be true and loyal to, which is your dream, that dream actually does come true in the face of all the impossibilities that the world's telling you. And you're never distracted if the game is big enough, right? The distractions only come in when you have time to be distracted, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, your focus is very much on the dream, which, In addition to the personal story power event, you also have the mastermind where you work with people on this very thing and help them get to that level and reach their dream. So,
Yeah, we sure do. We do. Yeah, we have a group called The Best, and then we just, you know, they go through a mastermind, and then we have them declare what they want to be the best at in the world, and then we
help them make that happen.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. It's about designing your life. You just design your life in a certain way. It's actually much simpler than people make it out to be. It's pretty damn easy to be the best in the world. Not easy. It's simple to be the best in the world at whatever you choose. Because guess what? There is zero competition for that. There's no one knows how to get those results because they're so distracted and they're just so chasing shiny objects and want to take shortcuts that there's actually no competition once you are loyal to that dream.
Yep. And bringing it back to just the physicality piece, Bo, I can't imagine someone being able to realize that big of a dream without being fully able to embody, get in their body, activate their body, know how to do that, right? Have those tools that you've learned that you now teach others, because without that level of embodiment and physicality, they do, like, they wander, they're distracted, their body isn't isn't fully there and doesn't have the direction and presence that it really needs.
That's right. And no one's going to fall. Look, if you have a huge dream, or your kids have a huge dream, which they do, they just maybe not have told you yet. Without the physicality piece that we've been touching on here, you are on your own, which you can't win this sucker alone. You have to have a team around you. Guess what that team is attracted to? Your vision, which is physical. Yep. Your body actually is this embodied, your body is the expression of the vision, of the dream. And that's what people are attracted to. And those people now come and give you money or give you access or give you food or give you coaching. They come out of nowhere because they're attracted to this physical thing that is attached to this vision that is going someplace. Think about the people that you married. Think about the people you're attracted to. Why were you attracted to them? Because they had a vision and they were going somewhere with that vision. And it informed every molecule in their body, and that's what's attractive. So you can't win this sucker alone. You got to have that team. To have that team, you have to have the physicality.
Yep. And I believe that you have a way to share with the audience this physicality through the Sacred Six. Yes?
I do. I have a text number for you.
Awesome.
It's hot off the press. My wife just handed it to me. So here, let me give you guys the number. So you're going to be led to a training of the Sacred Six. So you'll be able to do it every day. All my clients do it every morning. My kids do it every morning and activate their body so they're ready for the day. And you'll watch over time how this thing will impact your life. So here's the number. The number is 44222. Very simple. So text that number, 44222. And do they write in there Sacred Six, babe? Mm-hmm. So Dawn's telling me that you write in that text, Sacred Six. Sacred Six, and then we will send you that training.
And is Sacred right, Six in the number six or spelled out six?
Spelled out six. S-I-X. Sacred Good. Six.
And I will also make sure that that is in the notes right next to our recording for today so that they can access that and have that there as well.
Okay, good. Great. Yeah.
Thank
great.
You, Bo. Thank you for taking the time. I obviously have loved speaking with you. You've changed my life, and I'm very honored to have this experience of being able to talk with you today.
Yeah, thank you, Amy.
Tell them I just said it's sacred with the number six.
Now Dawn's yelling at me, it's sacred with the number six.
With the number six. Good. Glad we clarified. Thank you, Dawn.
Number six. Oh, that's why somebody, you know, in this household has got to be the brains of the organization, right? And that's Dawn.
And that is what she is best at.
Yeah, good. Amy, it was really great to visit with you today, and thanks so much for taking the training and love having that impact together, and can't wait to go further.
Good. And thank you for joining us today. I'm Dr. Amy, your host for this BioOptimize Summit. And make sure and get into the discount price for all of the recordings and the content while it is still available, because once that is gone, it is gone forever. And I would just love to see you inside, be able to connect with you more. Together, let's find that next level of health and aliveness.